Hello and welcome to Inside Education. My name is Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. Coming up on today's programme.
In 1992, Finland was in the middle of the very deep banking crisis and economic crisis. So it was a time when we really had to consider and think what is absolutely necessary in education administration.
We'll find out what exactly Finland did prioritise in their education system in the early 1990s and see what we can learn for Ireland. But first, as always, we go to Barry Hennessy for this week's news. You're welcome, Barry.
Hello again, Sean. We start with an intriguing circular from the Department of Education and Skills that could have very real implications for students of Leaving Cert Chemistry in particular. For the past 4 years, the European Chemicals Agency has been drawing up a list of substances of very high concern whose use in education and industry may be harmful and thus subject to authorisation. A number of common chemicals used in Irish schools and included on both the Junior Cert Science and Leaving Cert Chemistry syllabi have now been placed on the candidate list for Annex 14 of REACH, the European regulation that's given rise to the identification process. Most of the chemicals are compounds of cobalt, a substance that's increasingly regarded as carcinogenic. They're now to be isolated and stored securely in schools, pending collection by a chemical disposal company. The Department of Education and Skills is currently beginning a tender process for the collection and disposal of the chemicals. A number of mandatory experiments in Leaving Cert Chemistry require the use of the chemicals now to be removed. In its circular, the department says that the curricular implications of their removal will be considered by the NCCA and State Exams Commission. For the time being, though, the topics will remain examinable in the state exams. Now, this circular was only issued by the department on Friday, when many schools were closed for the St. Patrick's Day break. It'll be interesting to see how students, parents and teachers react to it in the days ahead. Moving on, and student leaders from around the country gathered in County Meath this week for the National Congress of the Union of Students in Ireland. Gary Redmond was re-elected as USI president for another year, and he used his keynote speech to sound a rallying call to students to regain their sense of confidence and focus on getting the country back on its feet. Mr. Redmond said that students have had to watch on as friends and family emigrated in search of opportunity and classmates dropped out of college as fees increased and financial supports dwindled. But the USI president went on to say that today's students are still the same highly educated and hard-working people they were at the height of the boom, with the same hopes, dreams and aspirations. But one group of people who might find Gary Redmond's rhetoric better in theory than practice are final year students in the colleges of education. They and recent graduates are becoming increasingly concerned at their prospects of securing employment this autumn owing to the large number of permanent teachers being redeployed. Now, redeployment panels have been a fact of life in the primary sector for many years, but the changes announced in Budget 2011 mean that many permanent teachers who previously worked in areas like traveller education or language support now find themselves back on the redeployment panel. A change in the pupil-teacher ratio also means that Gaelscoileanna have lost their preferential allocation, leading to the loss of some posts there. The Irish National Teachers Organisation has been deluged by inquiries, particularly from temporary teachers with 3 to 5 years' service who would ordinarily have been in line for permanent posts. The union has published answers to frequently asked questions on its website, but it says that many of the questions it's receiving are technical in nature and require a detailed answer. The Department of Education and Skills is to issue the lists of teachers on panels throughout the country to diocesan education secretaries from March 28th onwards, and the INTO says it'll publish these details on its website as well. Now, whatever the pressures on Irish students preparing for their Leaving Cert at the moment, spare a thought for Leaving Cert students in Libya. And yes, you did hear that right. The ISM International School in Tripoli is the only school outside Ireland to take the Leaving Cert. Since 2005, Irish personnel have travelled to Tripoli each June to supervise the exams, in addition to conducting oral and practical tests. The UN Security Council resolution that authorised the no-fly zone in Libya this week places a complete ban on all flights into and out of the country, with the exception of humanitarian missions. Inside Education has attempted to contact the ISM International School this weekend without success, and a spokesperson for the State Exams Commission has told us that they understand the school is currently closed. The SEC says it's monitoring the situation in Libya through the Department of Foreign Affairs and that no personnel are yet scheduled to travel to Libya, since no supervision arrangements have been made for any centres at this point. But Inside Education intends finding out about the fate of Tripoli's Leaving Cert candidates over the next week, and we'll tell you what we discover on next week's programme. Finally, it's with real sadness that we report the death of Mr. Gerry Haw, an English teacher and director of musicals and drama at Belvedere College here in Dublin. Gerry Haw died after a very short illness at the Mater Hospital late on Saturday night, just a week after the performance of his 100th Belvedere show, The Pickwick Papers by Charles Dickens. Among many Belvedere past pupils paying tribute to Mr. Haw was broadcaster Ian Dempsey, who said that Gerry was passionate about theatre, drama and the arts and loved by everybody. Arieshj Gareva Anam, Sean.
Gaurav Mahagath for that, Barry, and we'll have more, of course, from Barry Hennessy at the same time next week. You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Podcasts of previous programmes can be downloaded from iTunes or from our website, which is insideed.com. You can contact the programme by email at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie or by text message on 086-8962-665. That's 086-8962-665 for your text messages. Now, you might recall that back in January, principals of primary schools all around the country met up in Dublin to discuss issues around the theme of Our Children, Our Future. When they met, uppermost on many of their minds was how we can improve the results of Irish students on international tests, following the disappointing results in maths and numeracy literacy among 15-year-olds released at the end of last year. This national disappointment was compounded by the difficult economic environment in which our students will leave schools over the next few years. One place that the principals looked to for inspiration was Finland, a country that faced similar problems with their economy in the early 1990s and came out of it with students who do very well on international tests. More specifically, the Irish Primary Principals Network invited a Finnish education expert to address them. His name is Pasi Salberg. Pasi Salberg has worked as a teacher, teacher educator, senior advisor and director and served the World Bank in Washington and with the European Commission in Turin, Italy, as education specialist. He is adjunct professor at the Universities of Helsinki and Oulu. I spoke to Pasi Salberg at the IPPN conference and this week I bring you that interview. I first asked Pasi why he thinks that Finland is so successful in international tests such as PISA.
This is a question that requires a little bit more time, and this is also the question that has been so many times asked during the last 10 years, and because the question is so complex, there will be no one right answer. But I think during these last 10 years, when we in Finland have been thinking about how do we respond to this question, we have some kind of a candidate explanations. One, of course, is an obvious one. It's the teachers, that we are preparing our primary school teachers in high-quality universities up to master's degrees. It's a very competitive field of study in our universities, so only the very best of secondary school graduates can get there, which means that we have a very high-quality primary education basically through other subjects. So that's for sure one thing. I think the other one is that we have been able to shift the authority and decision making regarding the most important issues of teaching and learning to the level of schools. In other words, that the schools, every school is responsible for their own curriculum. They are also responsible for the assessing the progress and performance of their students and teachers as well. So there's a lot of autonomy and local responsibility as well to decide what is the best way in any given situation to organize teaching and learning. There may be some other issues there as well, but I would probably leave it here.
Okay. So if you say that each school has responsibility for determining its own curriculum, does that mean that we can't really talk about a Finnish school curriculum? Or how do teachers decide on their curriculum? Have they total freedom on that?
No, they don't. We have a thing that we call a national framework curriculum or national core curriculum. I would actually call it a framework curriculum that is kind of a basis for the school-based curriculum planning. At the moment, this document stipulates very broad overall objectives for school education. It provides the kind of a framework for planning the each and every subject of the curriculum. So the teachers and schools do not have a total freedom to decide whatever they want to teach. Then there's also the municipal level, where the municipalities have a say what, for example, what type of foreign language program they want to have, among other things. But basically we can say that the Finnish teachers in schools, they have a good degree of freedom to think about what is the best thing to be offered to the students and parents and communities to be sure that they are working in the areas where they have their best strengths.
And are decisions about class size, are they also decentralized?
Yes. This is something that each municipality and basically each school, each principal can decide. In other words, if there is a principal who would say, together with their teachers, that rather than having 18 students in a class, we can have 22, and in this way save resources for something else, they have freedom to do this.
And what about the teacher's qualifications? You said that it is a master's entry, or you certainly mentioned that in your talk today, but who decides what qualifications are required for teachers?
Well, this is centrally decided by the Ministry of Education. It's a very simple thing. It means that in order to be able to have permanent position as a teacher at any level in Finnish schools, you have to have master's degree.
Do you have a teaching council in Finland where you have a kind of a professional register for teachers?
No, we don't. The only thing we have of that kind is the trade union of education in Finland, which is a voluntary trade union-based association. But other than that, we don't have any councils.
Okay. And also, you abolished the inspectorate. Mm. Why was that done, and what kind of an effect did it have on what happens in schools?
Well, you know, this happened in 1992. This was a year when Finland was in the middle of the very deep banking crisis and economic crisis like I understand that you are unfortunately experiencing here in Ireland at that time. So it was a time when we really had to consider and think what is absolutely necessary in education administration. And by that time, we had already had about a decade and a half of master's level teacher education. And this was a very strong call also from teachers' side. They were saying that we don't need inspection, we need other type of support, and we need more professional development. So it was a choice for the government to decide whether we want to put money for inspection or professional development, and we chose the latter.
Okay, and what form does professional development take, or how is that organized in Finland?
There are many forms. How is it organized? At the moment, the government of Finland is allocating about 22 million euros this year for teachers and principals' professional development. Approximately the same amounts, probably a little bit more, will come from the municipalities who are the owners and governors of the schools. So we are talking about 50 million euro annual spending on professional development for teachers and principals. And these will be allocations in many cases. This will be allocations directly to the schools, where the schools can purchase the services as they wish. A common way to do this is to buy these services from private providers or universities, school development units or something like this. But in most cases, this is up to the municipality or the individual school to decide how they want to spend this money.
And so can an individual teacher decide when they want professional development, where they're going to get it?
In most cases, yes, they can. But, of course, we have schools and situations where these freedoms are more limited. But as a general rule, if you are a teacher in Finland, you can any time walk to your principal and say that I would like to have this or that type of training, in-service training course or professional development, and in many cases this will be made possible.
I'm sure that one decision that was made by Finland, the Finnish authorities, would be very popular among Irish teachers, and that is that you decided not to touch teachers' salaries when there was financial problems nationally.
Yeah, this is true, because we kind of understood in the middle of this very difficult and painful situation in early 1990s that the key thing to maintain and secure is the teacher morale, to make sure that teachers will continue cooperating and working together with the government and make sure that the main services will be maintained. And that's why there was a common consensus throughout the society that teachers' salaries should not be touched other than what was the necessary thing to do with the other public sector servants. But we were not cutting the salaries. How teachers experienced this was through the tax increase and some other dues that they had to pay, but teachers' salaries were not touched.
And, Pasi, you talked about the competitive entry to primary teaching. Under European Union regulations, are you not required to recognise qualifications of people from other countries? And if so, how does that affect the intake into the profession of teaching in Finland?
Well, in teaching, we are not tied with the European Union regulations. For example, if there's a young person with a bachelor's degree earned in Germany, in German teacher education college or university, this degree will not allow this person to teach in Finland. You have to comply with the national requirements and qualifications in teaching. It may be different in some other fields, but in teaching, we are following, each member state is following their own national requirements.
And would it even be possible for that teacher, say, from Germany, to do some, compensatory courses or something like that to prepare them to teach in Germany? Or is just that mutual recognition is not needed?
No, well, you need to have a master's degree before you can get the permanent employment in Finland. So if you have your bachelor's degree in the German university and you want to get the permanent position as a German teacher, for example, in a Finnish school, the only thing you have to do is to upgrade your degree to master's degree, either in Germany or Finland or somewhere else. But you are not able to receive a permanent position without master's degree in Finland.
And is it possible to train to be a teacher online in Finland?
No.
Okay. No. Why not?
Well, because this significant part of the teacher education in Finland is a practical training. It's a clinical preparation to be a teacher. And all teacher education in Finland is also research-based. And part of the preparation to be a researcher, and this is very important, by the way, that every Finnish teacher is also a researcher. It's not possible to do it online. So you have to take part in the seminars and present your own research, engage in the field work in the research, and that's something you cannot simply do online.
And what level of research do Finnish teachers do then?
So it's the same level as anybody who is doing a master's degree. If you're a medical doctor with the and you graduate with the medical degree, the teacher's research work for the master's thesis is exactly the same level as a medical doctor's master's level thesis.
I have two theories myself about why Finland does so well. One is, could it be because the Finnish curriculum or the Finnish framework is very well aligned with the PISA test?
No, it's not. I think if you take a look at this national framework curriculum, I think it's very difficult to say anything at all about the relationship with that one and the tasks and problems that PISA is using, because the curriculum design is made in the schools, and if you compare one school curriculum to another, there can be huge differences in terms of how the teachers have designed those things. I do not think that the Finnish success or performance in PISA has anything to do actually with the curriculum. I think it has probably more to do with the way teachers are are teaching and employing and implementing the curriculum in the classroom than the curriculum itself.
And the other question I had was, could it be because the intake into Finnish schools is relatively homogeneous, that it doesn't seem to have the same cultural diversity maybe as somewhere like the United States, to take an extreme?
Oh, sure, but then we can have an argument of the question that how much the diversity, the cultural diversity or linguistic diversity actually has to do with this thing.
But for example, we do know that, say, African American students tend to perform poorly on average in American schools.
Sure, yeah, that's for sure. I'm not saying that the lack of immigrant-based students in Finland, for example, wouldn't have nothing to do with this. But then, if we accept the argument that this is one of the main drivers of the good performance, then we have several other countries that we can add into the same line that have the performance that is nothing like in Finland. So I think this is an interesting argument, and for sure we cannot deny that the having a lot of complex immigrant background intake in the education system wouldn't have anything to do with this thing. But I don't personally think that this is something that will explain the good performance in Finland.
For example, we have schools here that are designated as disadvantaged because maybe there's a high level of poverty, or the parents don't have the resources to support their sons or daughters, and other factors like that. Do you have a high level of disadvantage among intake into schools in Finland?
Well, we do have, and we have. This is one of the issues that is a kind of an increasingly be recognized as an issue, particularly in the larger cities like Helsinki or Turku or Tampere, where more and more people are moving from other countries. And unfortunately, because of the lack of the proper housing policies, these people who are coming into the country are moving in the same area where they already have the population from the same area. So we are beginning to have these types of things. We have schools in Helsinki now where the majority of students are immigrant, first or second generation immigrants. So this is certainly becoming an issue. There are some municipalities, some cities in Finland who are considering putting the ceiling to the immigrant background students, for example, not allowing more than 25% of immigrants in any single school. So yes, this is something that we are experiencing. We are also having a widening income inequality within our own population in Finland. So this is something that we are, particularly based on the last piece, this 2009 piece, that we are more and more concerned about this.
Another part of your talk today that I found very interesting was the role of youth organisations. Mm. And one of the things you said, they do some of the work that's done by schools in other countries. Mm. Can you tell us a little bit about those youth organisations?
Yeah, well, you know, Finland is an interesting country because we, as I said today, that we have just a little bit more than 5 million people, and we have 15 million memberships in the organisations in the country. And much of this activity is falling into the age group of young people from 10 to 29 years old. So this means that the many of our young people belong to at least one organization. In many cases, they have something to do with the sports, but they are also religious organizations, they are voluntary youth work, scouts, and so on. I think what is important in this Finnish case is that when the crisis hit us in early 1990s, the role of these what we call third sector players became very, very important. And I was working in the ministry that time, leading the curriculum work and implementing these changes. And I remember clearly how these youth organizations, for example, took a kind of an active role in complementing the work that the schools were supposed to do and were not always able to do because of the declining resources and shrinking time that the schools were able to offer to students. And I think what was particularly important in this time was that these youth organizations, in many times, they wanted to be sure that the philosophy of education and aims of working with young people were in coherence with the curriculum and the educational goals.
And who runs these organizations?
Well, in most cases, if we take, I think about 40% of our young people of this activity is within sports. So those organizations are run by the local sports associations. So it's mostly a voluntary work.
And what time of the day do they have their activities at?
This is in most cases after school. In other words, from 4 or 5 p.m. to 8, 9 p.m. in the evening.
And how long is the Finnish school day?
It varies. If you take the elementary school, grades 1, 2, 3, the normal day is from 9 to 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. You can add one more hour when you go to the upper grades. But
so it's relatively short days.
Yeah.
When you say upper grades, at what age do you add the extra hour?
Well, if you take the sixth grade, for example, we talk about 12-year-olds, everybody's gone by 3 o'clock for sure. Most people are leaving school around 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
And what subjects are in the primary school curriculum in Finland?
There are many of those. So we don't have... I think one difference that we have with many other countries is that we don't have a... We don't call anything like core curriculum or core subjects. We have there's a wide range of activities. The arts and music and drama play a very important part of the Finnish primary school curriculum. We obviously have maths and reading. Foreign languages start at the grade 2 in Finland, and many others. But I think the significant thing in the Finnish curriculum is that we don't raise any particular subject to be more important than something else.
And that was Professor Pasi Salberg from Finland, who spoke to me in January when we both attended the annual conference of the Irish Primary Principals Network. That's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email us on insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. That's insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to Barry Hennessy for the education news. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.